Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. This is the show where we cover the news from the video games industry from the past couple of weeks. We are going to be talking about a lot of numbers, business numbers, businessy numbery things, which I hope are going to be super interesting for you, the listeners. We usually try to do this sparingly, but when we do, it's to extract the actual interesting information out of the business world. And we're going to have a discussion about XO18, with a number of announcements from Microsoft on the Xbox ecosystem and a bunch of other additional things. My name is Patrick Beja, and to help me make sense of all of that businessy business, I have a couple of super clever people who are going to explain to me what the hell is happening there. First, very happy to welcome back Nate Langson from, you're a businessy type, you're from Bloomberg. That's like you wear ties and actual proper clothes, right?
Well, my colleagues do, absolutely. I tend to wear jeans and a t-shirt every day. But yeah, I am a business technology journalist, and I cover consumer tech and gaming in Europe for Bloomberg.
Perfect. Thank you for being here. And we also have the, can I say the specialist, or at least the most visible to me in my Twitter timeline of the game industry in China and the analysis of said game industry, Daniel Ahmad. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Patrick. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm super, maybe not super excited, but reasonably excited to dive into all of those pieces of data, because there's a lot happening there, and there's some things that I've been hearing about from China for a while without quite fully understanding them, and I'm hoping that you can help us make sense of all of that.
Oh, I'll definitely try my best.
Excellent. So I guess the first number that we're going to be discussing is a really impressive one and speaks to core gamers all over the world, I think, but not only to core gamers. That is the peak concurrent players that Fortnite experienced this week, I believe, last week, since we're recording this on a Monday, which was 8.3 million peak concurrent players, which, it's a number. You might not understand how big it is if you don't have context for it. So I pulled a couple of notes from Steam Spy's Twitter, and Shanti Bergel, who is an analyst or advisor, at least. Basically, Steam, if you look at that, it has about 5 million peak players concurrent across all of its games on average. So that is the entire Steam player base goes to 5 million players playing at the same time, all of the games, with Fortnite being at 8.3. And the peak users in the Steam client is 16 million. So that's double, but it's just people who have the client open and who aren't necessarily playing games. If you look at concurrent players' records, you have now obviously the new highest one, Fortnite at 8.3 million. Crossfire, which I believe is a kind of a CSGO clone, which is very popular in China, if I'm not mistaken. At 8 million, League of Legends 7.5 million. Remember, League of Legends is one of the most popular games of all time. PUBG is 3.2, and then you go down from there. Roblox, very popular with the kids, I guess. You could say Fortnite is as well. Roblox is at 2.3, FIFA 1.6, Minecraft 1.4, Dota 2 1.3, etc., etc. Destiny 2 is at 1.2, and Call of Duty Black Ops is at 1.1. World of Tanks is also at 1.1. So this is an incredible number. We've seen this kind of writing on the wall with in a positive way for a while. I guess I'm going to turn to Nate. How, do we care as gamers, or is this important for the business world? Or it feels like it's a phenomenon that everyone should take notice of, but I don't know. It doesn't really change whether or not you would want to play the game, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important for the business world when you've got 8 million people playing a single game at one time. I mean, that's massive, massive money. I also think that one of the interesting things about comparing it to some of the games that stick around is that Fortnite is still a relatively new title. You know, you look at something like World of Warcraft that's been out for over a decade. It's still sort of ranking in the top 10 of these sorts of games in terms of concurrent players. And that game has managed to sort of maintain its longevity without, you know, people questioning why it even still exists. Whether Fortnite can still be around in what? How old is World of Warcraft now? Is it like 12 years or something?
Oh, even more. It's
2004.
Yeah, 15. Yeah. Like, I mean, will Fortnite be still around in there? That's going to be the key question. And I think for the business, people are looking at this and saying, okay, well, how do we ensure that this kind of user retention remains for the next 12, 13 years? They're going to look to games like World of Warcraft, and they also radically, you know, they're radically different types of games. And so I think educating shareholders and that sort of thing is going to be quite important for this one.
I think we're going to talk about retention over the long run and what Epic is doing for that in just a minute. But from what you're saying, I absolutely agree. It's a young game, but that is also something impressive, I think, because it managed to climb to the top of every possible metric, or, you know, if you want to put a fancy, sooty marketing term on it, KPIs, yeah, in the world, so quickly. And correct me if I'm wrong.
But it's free. It's
no,
free.
That's
it's,
true.
You know, it's a free game. And, you know, when World of Warcraft came out, it wasn't a free game. People are still buying expansions for, you know, for that release. It didn't go free to play for a few years.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'm not sure World of Warcraft has that impressive numbers of concurrent players. It certainly has subscribers, but I don't think you even have 1 million people playing at the same time, unless maybe it's an expansion launch. And yes, it's free, but all of the other ones are also free. Except, I guess, Minecraft isn't free, Destiny 2 isn't free, Call of Duty Black Ops isn't free. So there are exceptions, but there are many other free ones that are pretty successful that don't even touch the success of Fortnite. I get the impression that this kind of success, getting that high so quickly, is kind of unprecedented. I don't know if that's an impression, but Daniel, maybe you can tell me, has something like this ever happened? Because Fortnite didn't exist a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly become a global phenomenon sort of overnight, I guess. You look
or
at...
Or over a fortnight, am I right?
Or over a fortnight.
Okay,
I was
sorry.
Debating whether to
go there
to
or not.
That one in, but, yeah, but I thought against it. I thought I'd let you take the floor on that one. But yeah, so, I mean, I think you have to look at sort of the age that we're in at the moment and, you know, sort of how a lot of this can come together. The fact that Fortnite is available across every single platform, mobile, PC, console, the fact that it's free to play, but monetizes really well. You know, you wouldn't really get games like that 10 years ago that can come out and sort of have this big sort of cultural impact on the world. And I think what's very impressive about some of the numbers for Fortnite is that the 8.3 million number essentially is larger than, as you said, Crossfire, which is a Korean game, which is really popular in Asia, and it's essentially, as you said, Counter-Strike, but just the Asian version.
Right.
And so that hit about 8 million peak concurrent players. And so that's done really well in Asia. League of Legends is a global game that's done really well, and that's got about, as you said, 7.5 million at peak. But Fortnite is over both of those. And I think what's very impressive is that the game isn't actually officially out in China yet.
There's
a beta. Yeah, there's a beta for the PC version. So that's technically, yeah, the numbers will come from there. But there isn't an official mobile version, unless you sideload it on Android or something. So that I think that is something to keep in mind, that this game has achieved peak popularity without sort of having an official release in China. And because I think when you look at the League of Legends number, when you look at the Crossfire number, I would say more than half, if not considerably more than half, is China alone. Whereas in this case, it's very much a global game.
So it means that it's probably going to grow even more once it is officially available in China on mobile. And we can talk about this for in just a minute. Before we go there and focus on the Chinese mobile market, which is huge, I do want to mention that, as you said, Nate, Epic is looking at how to maintain the success of that game over the long run. And as I've been clamoring for the past few months, I'm continuously impressed by the choices they make and the way they manage to maintain the mystique around that game, both in game and with, outside influences, the latest of which is something that is so genius in my mind. Really, it's like the team at Epic has taken the incredible luck that they have had to be in the right place at the right time with this game and with the Battle Royale version of Fortnite, of course. And they have made, if life gives you lemons make lemonade, they have been given gold and they've been making diamonds. And in this case, what really impresses me is this thing that is now obvious once you hear it, but it's a genius partnership. They're going to have NFL skins for Fortnite, and you're going to be able to buy NFL skins. So National Football League, the American football, or as they call it in America, football, is going to be partnering with Epic to create skins in Fortnite. And you're going to have the different teams. And I'm sure this is just the first of many partnerships. You could imagine every sports league in the world. It could be the NBA, the NFL, football, soccer. It's endless. And at the same time, you have PUBG, which was there first and has a whole other host of issues, but they're doing what? They're partnering with Warner Brothers, Warner Bros., to add skins from the movie Suicide Squad, which was a flop at the, maybe that's what they could get and what could fit the aesthetic of that game, but I don't see how that improves it.
I mean, that game that film is sort of one of these films that's dedicated to be a cult classic, really, in that it wasn't commercially and critically that successful, but enough people like it to keep the brand going. And we've seen that from time to time with other films as well. But at the end of the day, we're still in kind of new territory as far as how do you monetize free games go. And one of the earliest examples that we saw to be incredibly successful, it's certainly in recent times, was when Team Fortress 2 introduced hats, and you could design and sell hats, and like the hat economy was just completely ridiculous. But at the same time, a huge moneymaker. That game is still going strong, and this is just sort of an extension of that, I think, just in a different type. Yeah. I was going to say even a different type of game. It's not really, if you think about it. It's actually extremely similar in a huge number of ways.
And it's not like I'm poo-pooing PUBG. It's still, as we mentioned, it's the fourth in the top list of concurrent peak users, and that game you have to pay for it. So, it's kind of, we already have $30 in our pocket from you, and there's millions of people playing at the same time. So it's not like it's something to be pitied. It's just I'm marveling at the creativity of Epic to keep getting, because it's a two-way thing. You know, the NFL is going to benefit from this, and Fortnite and Epic are going to benefit from it, especially with the end zone dances that athletes do that have been dances from Fortnite recently and stuff like that. So anyway, yeah. I thought it was really clever.
It is definitely clever.
All right, let's talk about China a little bit more since we have Daniel here. We mentioned that Fortnite is not available in China, and on mobile especially. Is that part of the... First of all, can you explain to us the pause in approvals for games in China that has been continuing for months now? How does that impact game companies there and the game market there, and how big can we expect Fortnite or really any game to be in China when it launches, I think especially on mobile? That's a lot of questions there, but take your pick.
Sure. I mean, to kind of simplify it all, if you're coming to China, if you don't know anything about the China games market, it's very different to the West, in that in the West you can essentially launch a game on Steam or through PS4 and you kind of go through those platform holders to launch your game. With China, you have to go through government regulators to obtain a license to launch your game, because China's government is very sort of paternal, and it wants to have control and sort of essentially it wants to oversee the industries that are within China. So whether that's games or films or whatever it is, you know, you need to acquire a license to bring your game into China and to distribute it or monetize it. And what's happened is in March of this year, there was a change in the basically a regulatory shakeup. And so a new regulator was created to handle this process of approving games. And that regulator was brought into control of China's essentially propaganda department. And since then, there has been no game approvals. So what that means is that if you had a game that you put into the approval process after March, it's still there and it hasn't been approved. And so you can't officially launch your game in China. Now, if you did have a game approved prior to March, you can actually still launch your game. There's nothing wrong with that, because you've already got the license, you've already got the approval. So there is a game freeze at the moment where essentially no games are launching in the country. The only ones that are those ones that have been approved prior to the freeze. So Tencent, for example, did release a couple of games last week, NetEase as well. But again, they were, you know, old games that have been approved a long time ago. And so that's causing a bit of this, I'm sure you've read articles, you know, there's panic in the industry and sort of a bit of just uncertainty as to what will happen next.
Is that why Fortnite hasn't officially launched yet, or are they caught up in that approval process, or is it something different?
For Fortnite, it's exactly that, where it needs to get a license number for a mobile launch and a PC launch. And at the moment, it's currently doing open testing on PC, but they haven't launched on mobile yet. And I think one of the big indicators as to why they haven't launched a mobile version just yet is when you look at PUBG Mobile. So PUBG Mobile is also developed and published by Tencent, and it's released in China, but it doesn't have a license for monetization. So the game is essentially free to play, and you know 100 million people are playing this in China every day, but they can't buy anything in the game. So Tencent put this game out on the market, and
they have a license. You know, they have a license for the game, but not for the monetization part of the game, right? You need a license for both.
Essentially, it's a beta they put out, if you want to call it that, testing version. But it's the real version, and they can't monetize it at all. And so, you know, Tencent got this game out, which hundreds, 100 million people are playing, but you can't buy anything in it. And so that's caused a bit of an issue for Tencent, where you know people migrating from other games that they might pay in to this game, where they don't have to pay anything.
Right. So there's a whole conversation about game addiction and making sure, you know, that teenagers don't get bad eyesight from playing games. And it seems to me like kind of a way the government, you know, the kind of excuse the government is putting forward to control the gaming market a little bit further and impose certain regulations and rules to the developers that they might not have been able to pass otherwise. Is that the case, or is it really their intent with these, you know, you're going to have to wear glasses if you play games too much? Is that a genuine concern? Like, it seems wacky.
So China's government as a whole has always been wanting to promote sort of healthy development of an industry. So again, whether it's games or something else, they've always sort of been in the driving seat of what healthy means. And so for gaming, what healthy means is that, you know, people aren't becoming addicted to games, or they aren't spending huge amounts of money on games, or that it isn't ruining their life. And for example, on with TV shows, it's about promoting the right sort of content so that people aren't getting, you know, maybe like anti-China ideas from the head or something to that effect. There's always a different definition of what healthy means in each industry. And then regulators are given control to sort of make that industry healthy. And so actually, when you look at the development of games in China, even going back to, you know, 2000, even the late 90s, gaming addiction has always been, and sort of healthy gaming has always been a concern. And, you know, console gaming was banned because of that back in 2000.
But just to make sure, sorry, to because I'm not sure I understand all of this, but part of the healthy gaming is making sure the games are being, or whatever is being portrayed, is in accordance with Chinese communist values, right? And that's kind of a catch-all for it's almost part of the propaganda machine, I would venture to say.
Essentially, I mean, there are certain things you can put in games, certain things you can't. Right. China doesn't have an age rating system like the ESRB or PEGI. So essentially, it's a list of rules that you have to abide by if you want to release a game in China. So to give a very quick example, you know, blood in China, so too much blood, like blood splats and stuff, has to be removed from games. And if there is blood in game, it's usually kind of green as opposed to red, just because they don't want, you know, excessive violence or, you know, excessive
anything. We had that in Germany for the longest time. Yeah. I think now they've relented a little bit, but that's, it might be a little bit heavy-handed, but that's kind of harmless, I would say.
There was a great example of that if you look at the old German version of Half-Life. Mm-hmm. That's always one of my favorite examples of when games have to be changed because of a blood-related rule.
I remember a lot of those PC games from the 90s having to, you know, make sweat instead of blood and stuff like that. I think Mortal Kombat was the sweat one. All right, so trying to seize that market, I'm guessing Fortnite will be a lot bigger once it's available officially in China. We did an episode last week, a bonus one, where we talked about BlizzCon and the announcement of Diablo Immortal, which is being co-developed with NetEase by Blizzard, and going to be a version of Diablo on mobile. A lot of people suspected that this would be a play for these kinds of games that already exist. Maybe they aren't the highest quality, but they are incredibly popular in China. Some of them are actually being developed by NetEase and others, specifically action RPGs. What do you think of this? Is it like, how big can this be in China? Is it really I don't want to say a cash grab, because that makes it seem like a nefarious intent, but certainly all games are made to make money, and this looks like it could be a huge amount of money. Is it the kind of thing that you think it's a gold rush, we can't not do it, or is it more, well, we love to make games on mobile, let's do this and it will be cool? Like, how much of the attraction is the giant gold mine that China is on mobile games, Daniel?
So China is the largest mobile games market in the world. It's the largest games market overall in the world, when you combine PC as well, even console. So, you know, the opportunity there is huge. When you look at the temporary game approval freeze at the moment, that is something that will be coming to an end shortly. It's just a case of restructuring the regulators and implementing new reforms. So once that's done, you know, games will start coming out there again. And so, I mean, Blizzard have said themselves they want to look at expanding their franchises to different platforms, mobile being a key one. And so I think, you know, partnering with NetEase on this, they are a developer that has experience in that area. I think a lot of people were confused, you know, when they saw other NetEase games that are very similar and you know, calling like a ripoff or
something
like that. Essentially, the way to think of it is that, you know, NetEase is sort of the Dynasty Warriors producer or the guys who made, is it Game of War or whatever machines they made? Because when you look at games like that, or developers like that, they're essentially creating versions of already successful game for, you know, different IP. So, for example, when Final Fantasy came to mobile, Final Fantasy New Empire, that was essentially a developer who already had a very popular game IP created version with Final Fantasy. And the same with Dynasty Warriors, where they sort of create new versions of that, but with a different IP on top. So it's not a reskin as such. It's more a case of they've got this expertise and they've got these assets and they've got this knowledge, and they're now building that on top of it. So they're now building that into a Diablo mobile game, which is similar in essence. As to how successful it can be, I think, you know, it's shown that those kind of games do perform quite well in China. I think there's a question as to how big it can be in the West. I think we've seen from the reaction that, at least among, you know, hardcore Diablo fans, it's not really going to be something that's played. But, yeah, I think, you know, when you look past that and look into the Asian markets, there's certainly an audience there. It's just... you know, how well it's marketed and developed.
I have a hard time understanding how much of this move is dictated by, you know, wanting to make money, and how much of it is dictated by, well, there's this new platform and this new audience and we should serve that as well, which I guess maybe they're the same thing and two different ways of saying the same thing. But Nate, maybe from a business point of view, when investors hear something like this, I think we've seen that Activision Blizzard's shares went down significantly given the reception of the game in the West. But surely the complaint being this is a cash grab for, you know, the East, this is going to be making money. That should make investors happy, right? Like, is this something that investors would be pushing for? Or I don't know.
I mean, basically, investors like it when the things they've invested in make lots of money. you know, one of the problems that, you know, you always get leveled at a game or at a developer is that they've, you know, they've sold out. They've sold out to the man. You know, the shareholders have demanded these changes, and it's commercially driven and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, that's part of the problem you have when you are a big company with shareholders. You kind of have to do things that they want. And also, you know, it's worth noting that public companies that have shareholders, you know, they have to be reporting growth potential over a 3-month period. They're not in it for the long haul. So you can't say, well, this game's going to do really well in about 10 years' time. When the audience has matured and people understand what it is, they want to know, okay, what's it going to do in 90 days and how are you going to get there?
Sometimes but the quickest Diablo Immortal is not going to be released in 90 days. This is, you know, probably a year away, maybe more. Maybe that's why the stock went down. But I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, we've seen a lot of weird market reactions. I mean, the most recent that I remember was when it was the Battlefront 2 loot drops.
Yes, the loot boxes controversy.
Yeah, I mean, that caused a real blip in the market as well. And part of the problem, I think, is that investors don't necessarily know what loot boxes are. You know, it's quite hard for them sometimes to get their head around why people would do that. They're worried about the fact that it may be conflated with gambling, and a lot of investors have money from, you know, they hold money from funds that have that prohibit their money being used for things like for vices, so sex, and gambling, crypto on occasion as well. So there's lots of things that can cause this, and it's difficult to predict.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I'm not sure I see things more clearly, but certainly the size of the Chinese market is a factor. I guess my last question would be to Daniel again. You kind of already answered it, but this is something that can be, I guess, okay, here's the way I'm trying to think how to formulate the question so it's clear. Is this move by Blizzard, and as you've mentioned, Alan Adham has said that they are looking at mobile versions of all of their IPs. So it's not just Diablo. Diablo is the first one. Is this something that can end up defining the company in the near future? We don't know what would happen in the long term, but in the near future, can this be something so big that it would define the company to the exclusion, or at least that it would eclipse PC and, to an extent, console games, or not?
Go ahead,
Daniel. I'll get back to Nate afterwards.
Okay. It's a good question, and I think that, you know, for Blizzard at least, the hope would be that, and I think, you know, they would want this to, all of their products stand on their own. And essentially, you know, if you're looking for a mobile Diablo experience or PC Diablo or console one, you know, you have them. I think they try to demonstrate that at BlizzCon with, you know, okay, well, now Diablo's on Switch and you've got the PC version and now there's a mobile one coming. I think one thing to keep in mind is that Blizzard has always looked to China as sort of an expansion strategy for its games. And so they actually have a joint venture with NetEase in China to distribute, you know, World of Warcraft, to distribute
Overwatch, Hearthstone,
whatever game. Yeah, Hearthstone. And so, you know, with this, essentially, Blizzard does have a good portion of the PC market in China through NetEase, but they want to expand that. And when you look to expand that, the obvious idea is mobile. And so that will open up a new avenue for Blizzard in China and Asia itself. And so I think when you look at it that way, you know, that it's bringing on this new audience, or sort of, you know, maybe this audience has migrated from PC to mobile in China and that used to play Blizzard games, that, you know, because I think Warcraft itself, the original, was very popular back in the day in China itself on PC. Mm. But, so I mean, that's certainly a draw. Just having this sort of Blizzard IP has come to mobile in China. But I think, as I said earlier, you know, they want to have products for basically every consumer, every audience, every market. I think that's what they're trying to do with this plan.
Right. That kind of reassures me. It means, and we'll see in the numbers from Activision Blizzard, that the existing market is pretty big still. Nate, you wanted to add something about this idea that mobile could eclipse the other games in importance in the company, maybe in the decision-making?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've basically seen that mobile will eclipse pretty much everything if given enough time. I mean, it's not really that long ago that people used to talk about Facebook as a non-mobile platform. You know, they had a few mobile apps, and now mobile is the vast majority of that company's revenue. Everything's gone mobile. So I kind of feel that I sort of actually see mobile devices as a little bit like black holes for everything, you know, whether it's absorbing different devices, you know, it's your camera, your GPS, it's your iPod, it's your camcorder, it's all of these things. They're all products we used to have different physical devices for. Now the phone is just that one device. And I see exactly the same thing happening in entertainment, exactly the same thing happening in video games. So yeah, I have no doubt in my mind at all.
Well, I have doubts. I think that the difference there is that the users all migrate to mobile for something like Facebook, or, you know, 90% or whatever. But I think those are essentially two different experiences. If you're gaming on mobile and if you're gaming on PC or on console, and even, you know, console and PC are different, they're much closer to each other than they are to mobile. But I think they're different, and that they are serving different needs. And that's why I don't think mobile is going to eclipse gaming in general. Even if mobile games become appealing to core gamers to an extent, which I think is possible, the, you know, past isn't necessarily precedent, it's not because mobile games have traditionally not been very appealing to core gamers from the PC world, that it can't happen in the future, I still think there's something different about PCs and consoles, which are more appealing to a certain type of gameplay and control scheme and precision. And that means that it is a different experience. And when you look at the results from Activision Blizzard, Blizzard's numbers, if you look at revenue, has grown tremendously year over year this year because of different factors. But overall, revenue and, if I'm not mistaken, profit are comparable to what's happening with King, which Activision acquired a while ago. So it's not like mobile for Activision Blizzard, at least, is making currently so much money that the other ones, they're going to not bother with them, which I think is the fear of a lot of people. A lot of people are saying, well, if you're making, you know, 100 million on mobile and 1 million on PC games, then why bother with the PC games? It doesn't really look like this is what's happening. And if you're making 100 million on mobile and 100 million on PC games, I think you're going to keep making both. And as you said, Daniel, they're trying to address every piece of the market and grow in other markets they're not addressing at the moment. But that doesn't mean that the existing markets will stop being addressed all of a sudden, especially since I think Blizzard developers and employees are PC games fans. Nate, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I just think that there's an interesting other trend going on that might be sort of worth noting, that I actually mentioned on my own podcast the other day, which is that if you look at what's happening in the PC and console world, consoles have become much, 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 much more like PCs. You know, they've broken out from their predictable like 8-year upgrade cycle. We're seeing mid-season upgrades. We've now got an Xbox One and a One S and a One X all on the, you know, on sale at the same time, near enough. And so tablets, I think in particular, as an extension of mobile gaming, have basically become the new consoles in many ways. You just press the game you want to play and it basically loads up. Maybe there's a little bit of multiplayer possibility there as well, but the basic simplicity is there, and you're not downloading 50 gigabyte day one patches, which are necessary for a lot of games. And that, I think, is going to be a bigger shift in trends than people maybe appreciate, particularly now you see that you're getting PC class unrestricted games on things like the iPad now. I think that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, I agree. Technically, the capabilities are there, but I still think the control scheme and, you know, the way you use them, sitting at a desk or chilling on your couch with a big screen and a controller in your hands, changes all of it. And, you know, having a notebook and having a little Post-it. You don't use them for the same thing. So I think this is the best analogy I can take.
I suppose so. I think the one thing that I think is that's a lot of what people said about newspapers, and that, you know, there's something great about sitting at a table on a Sunday morning reading the newspaper over a tea, and like people's habits change. And now we read our news on mobile, on trains, we get it delivered that way. So I think, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe long term, that's what's happening. I still think, and maybe that's an old person's view, I still think PC and console games have a certain quality that, if you go by the reaction to the Diablo Immortal announcement, people are very much attached to. But maybe that's the dying cry of a dying breed. I don't know. I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. And as long as some of those people are working at Blizzard, they'll still be making PC games as well. And the most important thing in all of this conversation is PC games are still making a lot of money. So anyway, quickly, let's address a couple of other things. Activision Blizzard announced that Destiny 2 was underperforming while Call of Duty Black Ops 4 was doing really well. The underperforming, I think, has led to a lot of commentary from a lot of YouTubers who may or may not be angry and take every opportunity they get to scream at the man and at the business. And I think the reality of this announcement is that them, maybe I'm mistaken, you guys can tell me, they admitted that they messed up by messing up Destiny 2 the way it came out last year, and that people were not, you know, people had given up on it. And while Forsaken, the expansion, has fulfilled 99% of the expectations of the actual playing base, the actual gamers, the problem is they messed up so bad with the one that came out last year that there aren't enough people interested anymore to make it a financially interesting proposition. So, of course, they said they were going to be looking at different ways of monetizing things. We've seen additional microtransaction, cosmetic microtransaction being added, and it's not unlikely we're going to see more of those in the future. But the community is super happy with the state of the game. And Bungie has stated this is how they want to keep developing the game. I don't think... Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think it means all of a sudden... I mean, one thing I railed against was the expansion pack policy from last year at the launch of the expansion, which I think was a real hindrance to the adoption of that latest expansion in an attempt to generate as much money as possible. It was misguided. And I think they're not idiots. I think they're taking away the correct information from those things that happened with the launch of the expansion. And I'm not surprised at all that it is underperforming, because they've burnt, you know, they fooled people too many times, not with issues with money, but with issues with trusting Bungie to make the game they should. It was game design issues, not monetization issues. And maybe you could argue, you know, Destiny 2 Vanilla was dictated to be more casual friendly by the higher ups at Activision, who demanded the game appeal to more people. I guess it's possible. I really don't think so. I think Bungie intended to make the game more casual friendly, and that severely misfired. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. I'm curious to see what will happen with Destiny 3, but I think we're going to see a Destiny 3 where we will be losing all of our progress again. It's going to be a hard reset, maybe not next year, but the year after that. It's going to be a hard reset for Destiny again, which they're in a tough situation now, because expansions only speak to people who are invested in the game for the most part. Some people might return, but many won't. And since they've already done a hard reset with Destiny 2, can they do it yet again? I think they can, because if the game is in a good state, they can just port over the other players. They will still want to be playing if they are enjoying the game, which they very much are right now. So anyway, this made a lot of noise. I think it was misunderstood by a lot of people who kind of half wanted to misunderstand what Activision Blizzard was saying. So anyway, I don't know if you guys have any comment on this or if we move on.
I think you're right. Generally speaking, I think when you look at Destiny, when it first launched, it was the biggest new IP launch of all time then. And it's essentially been on a steady decline since. And when you look at how Destiny 2 was received, and then even Forsaken, yes, it fixed a few things, but as you say, you know, it's burned out a lot of people, and the game is nowhere near as big as it once was. And I think, you know, Activision, especially Activision, but Bungie as well, are going to be looking into how they can either bring back that user base or target kind of a new player base.
So would you expect microtransactions that would be pushing the limit on what's acceptable to try and monetize the existing player base? Or do you think they won't try to burn more bridges?
I think they'll probably try to focus on what comes next in the Destiny franchise. I think they know how 2 is being received and what's going on with the expansion. I don't think there's much that they can do right now that would change things.
All right. Okay, let's move on very quickly. A couple of the highest selling games in the US, this is very specific, on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One lifetime. This comes on the heels of the announcement that Red Dead Redemption 2 has sold 17 million copies, or at least sold in, meaning copies shipped, not necessarily in the hands of the consumers, but that's still a significant number. And GTA 5 has sold 100 million units. This is mind-boggling. But the highest-selling games on PlayStation 4 are Grand Theft Auto 5, of course, Call of Duty World War II, Black Ops 3, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. So on PlayStation 4, you have three Call of Duty games in the top four. NBA 2K18, that's lifetime sales, remember, in the US again, so it's a specific market. Battlefield 1, and only in seventh place do we see God of War 2018, which is a platform exclusive. I would have thought that platform exclusives would sell a lot better on a specific platform. You have a couple of others, including another Call of Duty in that top 10. And if you look at the Xbox One, again, Grand Theft Auto 5, Call of Duty World War II, Black Ops 3, Infinite Warfare, Battlefield 1, Star Wars Battlefront, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, and only in 8th place, Halo 5 Guardians, and then you have Destiny 2 in 9th place. It's kind of, I could have swore that specific consoles would sell, you know, console exclusives more than non-console exclusives. I guess it's marketing, or those games, the Call of Duties and sports games and games like those, are just the games that people buy. You know, we always have this image of the gamer that is a casual gamer. He buys a couple of games a year, or she, couple of games a year, and those are the ones that sell hugely, bigly. And not the console exclusives, which are more core gamer-y, maybe like Halo or God of War. I don't know what else to say about this, but if you have anything else...
Nailed it. Yeah. I think you basically nailed it, is that these games are like clockwork. They come out once a year in November. The same people buy them every year. It's predictable. You know, that's it. It's kind of boring, actually, when you think about it, but that's basically what's going on.
And essentially, when you look at the charts in Europe... It's the exact same, but remove NBA and replace it with FIFA.
Right.
Yeah. And it's that's what it comes down to. Yes, platform exclusives do well, and they drive hardware sales and software sales. But you know, really, it's those mass market games that are at the forefront of driving the console market.
And so it's.
I just want to throw one other thing in there, is that there's been another change, if you think about it, which is that these aren't just console exclusives now, or console bonuses, is that you actually get retailer exclusives. So you can buy something from Amazon and get some kind of in-game DLC that you don't get if you buy it from Best Buy in the US, or if you buy it from Argos here in the UK or something like that, or Tesco. And that's changed it, because that's not always necessarily platform exclusive. It's like a third tier of exclusivity.
But that's brick and mortar stores trying to remain although Amazon does that as well, so it's any platform trying to grab your attention and dollars, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think one thing to note about this, sure. Well, just sorry, really quickly, Patrick, is that, you know, these are paid games, so $60 or whatever. It doesn't include free-to-play. So Fortnite, for example, has been a big driver this year, right, of console hardware. And it's not on this chart because, you know, you don't pay anything for it, you pay in-game. But, you know, that would probably be, in terms of downloads, one of the top downloaded games. In fact, for Nintendo, they said that in one of the investor briefings that this half of all owners on the Switch had downloaded Fortnite. And, you know, that's the Switch. It didn't come out on the Switch until very recently. And already half the people who have a Switch already own a copy of Fortnite. So
yeah, that's and actually on the Switch, there were a couple of people who were telling me some really interesting things. I can't remember if I mentioned it already, but the idea that the Switch is going to slow down sales-wise this year, which was a concern, I think, for me, because they didn't have major releases except for Smash Bros., which honestly... I think the people who want Smash Brothers already have a Switch. But there's, first of all, it's an ideal machine for your kids to play Fortnite, because they can use it without hogging the screen. And you also might be interested in buying more than one, because you might have more than one kid who's interested in playing Fortnite. So they might make up for the some of the sales numbers losses that they would have by not having big titles released for the casual audience, by having, you know, the brother has one, so the little sister wants one too. I guess it might happen. And finally, Pokemon Go is doing making a lot of money. $73 million in revenue this October. This October. That's
amazing.
Who would have thought, like, Pokemon Go, is that the hype for Pokemon Let's Go on the Switch? Like, where do these people come from? I don't understand. I guess it's everyone. It's just not me for that amount of money. And it's, you know, increased over last year. It's mostly Japan and the US. That's like 2/3 of the revenue. But still, I don't understand that game. And by the way, the Ingress has been relaunched as Ingress Prime. That was a precursor of Pokemon Go by the same company. So this is foreign to me. I don't get it.
I agree. I can't understand it either, because this is people spending huge amounts of money in that game. And are these existing players or new players? Because if you're an existing player, you must have spent a hell of a lot of money at this point in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that I can think is that because of this staggered release of new Pokemon in that game, there's an ability for them to keep having people coming back. Like, they keep releasing the new regions of Pokemon. And
Right. Maybe
if you did actually catch them all and you were just leaving it on your phone, waiting for the next batch to come along, then maybe that's enough to get you back again. But it wasn't enough to keep me, although I should say is enough to keep my slightly younger brother, who still plays on a daily basis.
Well, clearly, yeah, there are other, you know, people who play it. And you're right. It's releasing new Pokemon all the time. I know a lot of people in the audience play it all the time, but it's a collection game. I guess you collect the stuff and it's pretty casual, and I don't know. It's just, and I'm confident, not to drag us back into the conversation about mobile, but I'm really confident that we're not going to have all of a sudden PC games disappear, because all of these things are making money, and there are a lot of people who play Pokemon Go. And a lot of, you know, it can be true that people play Pokemon Go and other people, or even the same people, play other games. Like, it's not like everyone is all of a sudden rushing to, well, maybe I shouldn't speak too quickly, but anyway. All right, let's talk quickly about the XO18, the Xbox Festival that was happening in Mexico City this weekend. There were a number of announcements by Microsoft. The biggest one, I think, is the announcement of the purchase of two studios, InXile and Obsidian, by Microsoft. And those are studios that have been making, interestingly, successful Kickstarted games. And they are very much Western RPGs, core gamer RPGs that are, you know, very much beloved by the core audience that they are designed for. Of course, Microsoft could do things in the wrong way with those studios, but they seem like they have been very much on a buying spree and understanding that what they needed were games and exclusive games, even though, as we've seen earlier, those games aren't the ones that sell the most on a platform. They are system sellers, and that's what you want people to buy your platform for. That's just an additional announcement to the many studios they have purchased and announced already. This is great. It's not going to bear fruit until a couple of years down the line. But yeah, go Microsoft. More studios purchases, I would say.
It was Obsidian that did one of the South Park games, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, that was back in the day before Ubisoft took it back in-house. But yes, this is one of the... They also made, if I'm not mistaken, it's them who made Fallout New Vegas.
Yes.
But their latest ones are more, you know, isometric, top-down view, like super old school core Western style RPGs. I think that's what they've been doing now. But you're right. You know, it's not the only thing they can do. New Vegas and South Park are great examples of what they can also, their versatility. It's not necessarily all going to be Pillars of Eternity forever. Other than that, Crackdown 3 was announced for February 2019. They showed off a 5v5 multiplayer mode, which seemed... I mean, this game was disappointing many times what they've shown it did before. I think this demonstration was kind of brought it back up a little bit. The destructible environment, thanks to the Azure cloud, whatever, that was a little bit gimmicky, but the destructible environment is... different, so maybe it's going to be fun. I think it rolls it back up to not a system seller, but like a AA title that could be a fun thing for owners of the Xbox. And the biggest thing, I think, is how much they were selling the idea of Game Pass. It was Game Pass all the time, like Game Pass, Game Pass, Game Pass. Managed to say this without stuttering. They have a promotion. It's $1 for during the holiday season to get a month of Game Pass. They have PlayerUnknown's Battleground, which is included in Game Pass next week. Crackdown 3, of course, is going to be included. Crackdown 1 is free on Xbox now. I don't think it's part of Game Pass, but it's like they are really going hard on that idea of a gaming subscription, which I'm guessing is because that's where the money is. But I was still a little bit surprised that they pushed it so hard. Is there a competitive advantage, I guess? Daniel, is there a specific reason why they were trying to sell Game Pass so hard during this event?
I think when you look at Microsoft's strategy over the past few years and obviously in the future, it's all revolving around the idea of essentially games as a service, and not maybe in the traditional sense that we know, in terms of microtransactions and stuff, but the fact that games can be played anywhere, anytime, any platform, any model. You've heard like Netflix of games and stuff like that. So that's essentially what Game Pass is. At the same time, you can still buy games, $60 or whatever
if you want to. And by the way, sorry to interrupt, but they did mention maybe trying to reassure their partners. They did mention that people who have Game Pass actually end up buying more games outside of Game Pass.
Yeah,
that's a little bit convenient, but I don't think they would be saying it if it wasn't verifiable. So,
yeah, it's true because Game Pass just helped with word of mouth and stuff like that, and sort of getting more people in games, especially their multiplayer games. So someone might subscribe to Game Pass, and then perhaps they would buy it themselves once their subscription runs out, or they would have friends that buy it.
They try a game they wouldn't have tried otherwise and get interested in a new genre like that, yeah.
And so when you look at the overall strategy, even stuff they recently announced, so Project xCloud, which is their online streaming service, it's all about how a game's being distributed, and how can and where can gamers play games. So whether it's through the cloud, whether it's through a subscription service, whether it's through a traditional, going to a shop and paying $60 for a game, being able to do that is important. And then being able to play on any platform. So whether it's a PC or Xbox or even mobile, or maybe there won't be a need for hardware in the future with streaming. Dedicated hardware, I mean. There's all these different ways that you can acquire games, play games, and sort of, have fun. I think that's what Microsoft is trying to position themselves. That's how they're trying to position themselves as sort of a games distributor in the future. And
that's really interesting. I guess seeing streaming as the future, it makes Game Pass kind of a stepping stone to that future. And the more you get people used to the idea of Game Pass, the easier it is for them to take that other step towards streaming. I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to think as well that one of the reasons why Netflix is very successful is because of content that they have and their content strategy. And that's why you see Microsoft buying a lot of these studios or investing in their first party or even third party partnerships, for example, with PUBG, because they they want to be able to say, well, look, we have all the infrastructure, we have the ability to stream games or subscribe to Game Pass or just buy games normally. But then we also have the content to back that up with, you know, maybe these niche games which would appeal to this sort of audience, but also these really big games like PUBG that would appeal to, you know, a much broader audience.
That's actually, thank you, another really interesting aspect of this. Netflix is really good at identifying niche audiences that are really passionate about certain types of shows or that we'll really get into. You know, they have all the data about the actors, the directors, all of that. And it seems to me like companies like InXile and Obsidian are exactly the same fit that mindset, that you're going to have companies that fit a certain audience specifically, and those are your core fans that you need to cater to in order to get your service running, and then you expand slowly to more casual gamer that you could target anyway without those specific types of titles in the case of gaming or series or movies in the case of Netflix. So yeah, that fits in together pretty well. And
it's essentially about reaching the largest audience possible. And then these are the ways they're doing it.
Finally, the last announcement was the fact that we're going to have mouse and keyboard enabled on Xbox One. Well, next week, so this week, very quickly, it's going to start with Fortnite and Warframe. I'm not sure consoles are super fitted to mouse and keyboard. I guess you could hook it up to your computer monitor and play on your desk. Razer is going to announce very soon some dedicated hardware. I'm guessing it's going to be like put a mouse and keyboard on your lap when you're in your couch. Those have existed in the past. The concern about fairness on the same platform are, of course, warranted because you're more precise with a mouse and keyboard than you are with a controller. Epic addressed this by saying, we're going to matchmake people who are using mouse and keyboard with other people that are using mouse and keyboard, which basically fixes the issue. I suspect most developers will take the same approach. And it should be noted as well that in order for a game to support mouse and keyboard, that functionality has to be coded in by the developer. It doesn't all of a sudden enable mouse and keyboard on all of the games.
I think on that front, what we're going to see is maybe not this generation, but next generation is sort of a universal version of a game on Xbox platforms. So whether it's a PC version or an Xbox version, you know, it can be played similar to how on PC you can just put a controller in. On Xbox, you can just plug in a mouse and keyboard, and that'll apply across whatever distribution platform Microsoft uses next gen. So whether it's smart TVs or Xbox or PC, and whether it's streaming or Game Pass or just the standard distribution version. Being able to play however you want is, and wherever you want, is going to be a key component.
So let me ask you this. How long until we see a tiny, compact WASD keyboard with just like 9 keys and mouse that we can socket in a mobile, any type of mobile or tablet, to play those games in that way as well? That could lead me to play, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's with xCloud, they said they're looking into a mobile version.
Right.
So
right.
Being able to stream games to, you know, your iPhone or iPad is certainly something that will be there. And then, you know, being able to use a wireless controller or even touchscreen if they have that option, I think that's essentially what you're going to see. And it's going to be that, you know, you can play those core games wherever you want, however you want. Yeah. We're still a bit away from that, but it's sort of where everyone... It's sort of where Microsoft want to be, maybe at the end of all this.
I think, yeah, it's a little bit away. I think it's a great idea in theory, but in practice, we haven't really seen this work out. It's already possible to have a Bluetooth controller that would work really well with a mobile platform or a phone, but it just doesn't work. Maybe it's because the games aren't there yet. Once you can actually use the actual games that need a controller, then it can work. Or maybe once respected developers try to do proper games on those platforms for the core gamers that are used to games on PCs or on consoles, at that point you get people interested in that because the games are what they're looking for on those platforms. I don't know what the all of those could be possible, but all right, let's move on to a series of very quick news tidbits. Of course, we have a bunch of releases happening in the few weeks around this episode. We have Tetris Effect, Hitman 2 coming out, I think, tomorrow. Battlefield 5, I think, is next week or maybe the week after. So the end of year season is coming kind of to a close. The round they get out, I would say, is going to be Smash Brothers in early December, right after the Game Awards night, which, by the way, how are they going to, they're not going to include Smash Brothers into their considerations for Game of the Year? I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll see, I guess. Maybe it's going to get pushed to next year. That's an interesting one. The game director for Final Fantasy XV has quit Square Enix, and the remaining character DLCs have been canceled. There were three remaining, or four, ones that were supposed to come out. Only one is going to be coming out fairly soon. Gutted. Is the one that was... Yeah, what happened there? Like, I know,
absolutely gutted. He totally made that game brilliant, I think, his influence. And the DLC that they released was pretty good. And I'm absolutely gutted that he's gone, because it really calls the rest of this, you know, what they had planned for Final Fantasy 15 into question, which is just
depressing. I think the game didn't do as well as they had hoped. I think
it did very well, though. It did very well. Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah. Okay. Whether it did enough, I don't know, because they had some problems in their earnings recently. But the game sold very, very well.
To be fair, Hajime Tabata, who is the game director, was called in to finish that game because they couldn't finish it. And he was called in to basically say, all right, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's him. We need to get that game shipped because we've been at it for like 15 years at this point. I'm exaggerating a tiny bit. But the fact that, I mean, it seems like it's an amicable parting of ways. So I don't think it was too much of a huge issue there. But still, I'm very surprised that he's leaving. He's leaving to make a new company, create a new company to make other games. But I don't know. The suddenness of it and the fact that they're not making the additional DLC must mean that the money isn't there in the existing DLC they've already released. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a real shame. But I think part of the problem with Final Fantasy XV in particular is that its development was so long, so protracted. Right. You know, we're talking just... I think it was announced in like 2006 or something ridiculous originally, as part of the Final Fantasy XIII series.
Yeah, exactly. Originally, it was Final Fantasy XIII. Which one was it? Versus or whatever
Versus,
the name was.
Versus yeah. 13, yeah. And I was actually at the Tokyo Game Show announcement when they announced that it was being changed from 13 to 15. And, you know, there was this whole new level of excitement for the game at that point. Mm. And then more recently, they released the mobile version, Pocket Edition, which they then weirdly also brought to Xbox and PlayStation 4, I think. it's a bit strange, but it could have gone on for a long time, this franchise. And you could probably tell I'm gutted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Final Fantasy is going anywhere. Square Enix is definitely going to keep developing Final Fantasy games. The name recognition is too big for it not to continue. I'm wondering how much effort they're going to be putting behind the next one, though, because I don't think they can keep envisioning those, pyramid-like projects that will take up the effort of the entire company for 10 years. But I don't think Final Fantasy is disappearing, but maybe the next ones are not going to be what we expect of Final Fantasy as a game. But what else? If you haven't seen KDA, the pop girl song by Riot Games. Like, it takes League of Legends characters and puts them in a girls band like setting in a video, a music video, which is incredibly well designed. Like, it's, I couldn't stop watching it. For like, the music is poppy and fun, and it, you know, it's an earworm, it's going to get in your brain, but the visuals of it were incredible. I wanted to mention it because it is really striking, and I thought it was an amazing job by whoever ended up making that for Riot Games. Maybe them, the artists of the company itself, I don't think so, but yeah, it is really engrossing. And as a marketing tool, I have not cared about League of Legends for almost ever, and that was just brought it back to my attention very, very strongly. So that was really cool. Beat Saber is coming out on PlayStation VR on November 20th. So that is a game that is highly regarded as a VR game. It's essentially a dancing game with lightsabers from Star Wars, except it's not from Star Wars, but very highly regarded game. I might get my PlayStation VR hooked up again when it comes out, and it will give me a chance to try out Astro Bot Rescue Mission, which people have been raving about as well. Fallout 76 is going to be out, and there might be a lot of bugs, maybe a little bit of hacking. Bethesda says no, but bugs definitely.
Of course, there will. It's a Bethesda game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, bugs for sure. Hacking, there's a lot of. I'll leave that discussion for another time. But Bethesda is saying yes, there are things happening locally, but things are secured on the server side, so there won't be hacking. But there were some claims there. Bugs, however, they have said there will be bugs in that game, which is concerning. But like, if Bethesda games always have bugs when they're released, but when Bethesda warns you that there are going to be big bugs, it's like, whoa, okay.
I've actually heard that the day one patch is going to be bigger than the game itself.
That wouldn't be surprising.
I'm not even kidding.
What?
I'm not even kidding. I think it's like the game, the day one patch is bigger than the game install.
Bethesda, we love you anyway. That's funny how some companies get a pass for these things when I think it's okay, it's fine, but it's funny which ones get a pass and which ones don't. I think Nintendo gets a lot of passes on a lot of things. But, you know, we love them, so. The Sims 4 is getting a first-person view. I'm not sure why, but it seems weirdly enticing to me. I guess The Sims 4 is still going strong. And DayZ is finally getting into beta, which is very close to release. The game has been in alpha for 5 years. What that tells me is maybe we'll see also other games that have been in alpha forever in the future. Wink, wink, Star Citizen. What else? A couple of additional tidbits. The Parisian team for Overwatch, for the Overwatch League, has a name. It's called Paris Eternal. I like that name. I'm okay with the logo. I thought the unveil video was kind of poor, but I'm ready to cheer for the Paris Eternal. I really like this idea that the Overwatch League is associating its teams with cities. That does wonders for fandom, I think. So looking forward to season 2, which is going to start early next year. And finally, do you remember those DDoSs that attacked many of the online gaming services back in the end of 2013 when the new consoles were being launched? Well, they caught the guy, the derp trolling on Twitter person. I'm not going to mention his name, but they caught the guy, and he's going to plead guilty, and he is in trouble. And I wanted to mention it, you know, it's old news, but I wanted to mention the fact that he didn't get away with it. The law, I say, as I remember cowboys mentioning the law in that way, caught up to him. And that's probably a good thing because it's all fun and trolling and, oh, it's games and whatever. But No, it's actually really problematic stuff, and it has an effect on people's enjoyments and businesses, and it should be addressed, and it is being addressed. So that is probably good news, even 5 years later. And that's it for this episode of Pixels. Thank you so much for being with me, both Daniel and Nate. Will you tell the good people listening where they can hear more of your excellent analysis of the gaming industry or anything else, really? Let's start with Daniel. Go ahead.
Sure. So you can find me mostly on Twitter at JugaEX, which will probably be in the description.
Yes,
it's hard to spell.
But no one will ever find it if the link isn't in the description, except people who really love Chinese history.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mostly tweet about the games industry on there, and then from there you can find links to our company blog, which usually has updates about the China games market. So, I mean, if you're interested in, I guess, the games industry or China games industry, then yeah, feel free to follow, and hopefully it's useful.
Lots of really interesting numbers all the time on Daniel's Twitter account. Numbers and excellent dad jokes. Although I've noticed your pun game has been decreasing recently. You're not as on point. I haven't seen as many. I'm a little bit disappointed, I have to say.
Well, you know, at some point you kind of grow up. And
Please never grow up, Daniel. Please.
I'll try and add a few more there.
Excellent. Nate, what about yourself?
Best place to get me, to be honest, given that this is a podcast, is my podcast, which is Text Message, which can be found at techpodcast.uk. This week in particular actually is quite a good one, because we spent a little bit of time debating Red Dead Redemption 2 versus Life is Strange, which is an interesting debate. I'll be honest.
That's an unexpected one, but I can see how it could be discussed. Yeah, indeed. Cool. So Text Message, and you can find that from Nate's Twitter account, which will be in the show notes as well. For me, it's NotPatrick on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And you will also find this podcast at frenchspin.com. You can go there and comment on what we've said. If you agree or disagree with anything we have said, please feel free to let us know. And you'll also find another show there called The Phileas Club, which discusses news from around the world. And we talk about things that might be difficult to talk about sometimes, but that are always interesting, I would say, and try to talk about them in a civil manner. The latest episode was a special about what's happening in Brazil, actually. So if you've heard about what's happening in Brazil but aren't quite sure what the deal is, then go check it out. We had Guilherme on the podcast, who is in Brazil, detail all of the things that led to the current situation and all of that. So the show is called The Phileas Club, but go to frenchspin.com. You'll find links to the RSS feed for the podcast there. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Talk to you then. Bye.
most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.